He sighed as he sat nursing the chipped and bent knife. He was going to love her if it killed him, or her, or both. It wasn't easy being a father. He knew that no one had ever said it was going to be easy, but that wasn't the point, because he'd never asked about being one in the first place. He was doing his best. Every moment he could rest away from making sandwiches, he was spending with her, talking to her, walking with her, sitting on the hill with her, watching the sun go down over the valley in which the village nestled, trying to find out about her life, trying to explain to her about his. It was a tricky business. The common ground between them, apart from the fact that they had almost identical genes, was about the size of a pebble. Or rather, it was about the size of Trillion, and of her they had slightly differing views. "What's this?" He suddenly realized she had been talking to him, and he hadn't noticed. Or rather, he had not recognized her voice. Instead of the usual tone of voice in which she spoke to him, which was bitter and truculent, she was just asking him a simple question. He looked round in surprise. She was sitting there on a stool in the corner of the hut, in that rather hunched way she had, knees together, feet splayed out, with her dark hair hanging down over her face, as she looked at something she had cradled in her hands. Arthur went over to her, a little nervously. Her mood swings were very unpredictable, but so far they'd all been between different types of bad ones. Outbreaks of bitter recrimination would give way without warning to abject self-pity, and then long bouts of sullen despair, which were punctuated with sudden acts of mindless violence against inanimate objects, and demands to go to electric clubs. Not only were there no electric clubs on Lamuella, there were no clubs at all, and in fact no electricity. There was a forge and a bakery, a few carts and a well, but those were the high water mark of Lamuellan technology, and a fair number of Random's unquenchable rages were directed against the sheer incomprehensible backwardness of the place. She could pick up the sub-ether TV on a small flexor panel which had been surgically implanted in her wrist, but that didn't cheer her up at all because it was full of news of insanely exciting things happening in every other part of the galaxy than here. It would also give her frequent news of her mother, who had dumped her to go off and cover some war which now seemed not to have happened, or at least to have gone all wrong in some way because of the absence of any proper intelligence gathering. It also gave her access to lots of great adventure shows, featuring all kinds of fantastically expensive spaceships crashing into each other. The villagers were absolutely hypnotized by all these wonderful magic images flashing over her wrist. They had only ever seen one spaceship crash, and it had been so frightening, violent, and shocking, and had caused so much horrible devastation, fire, and death, that, stupidly, they had never realized it was entertainment. Old Thrashbark had been so astonished by it that he had instantly seen Random as an emissary from Bob, but had fairly soon afterwards decided that in fact she had been sent as a test of his faith, if not of his patience. He was also alarmed at the number of spaceship crashes he had to start incorporating into his holy stories if he was to hold the attention of the villagers, and not have them rushing off to peer at Random's wrist all the time. At the moment she was not peering at her wrist. Her wrist was turned off. Arthur squatted down quietly beside her to see what she was looking at. It was his watch. He had taken it off when he had gone to shower under the local waterfall, and Random had found it and was trying to work it out. "It's just a watch," he said. "It's to tell the time." "I know that," she said, "but you keep on fiddling with it, and it still doesn't tell the right time, or even anything like it." She brought up the display on her wrist panel, which automatically produced a readout of local time. Her wrist panel had quietly got on with the business of measuring the local gravity and orbital momentum, and had noticed where the sun was and tracked its movement in the sky all within the first few minutes of Random's arrival. It had then quickly picked up clues from its environment as to what the local unit conventions were and reset itself appropriately. It did this sort of thing continually, which was particularly valuable if you did a lot of travelling in time as well as space. Random frowned at her father's watch, which didn't do any of this. Arthur was very fond of it. It was a better one than he would ever have afforded himself. He had been given it on his 22nd birthday by a rich and guilt-ridden godfather who had forgotten every single birthday he had had up till then, and also his name. It had the day, the date, the phases of the moon. It had "to Albert" on his 21st birthday, and the wrong date engraved on the battered and scratched surface of its back, in letters that were still just about visible. The watch had been through a considerable amount of stuff in the last few years, most of which would fall well outside the warranty. He didn't suppose, of course, that the gravity had especially mentioned that the watch was guaranteed to be accurate only within the very particular gravitational and magnetic fields of the Earth, and so long as the day was 24 hours long and the planet didn't explode, and so on. These were such basic assumptions that even the lawyers would have missed them.